Today on Maine Calling, food safety. So far, Maine seems to have escaped the impact of the national cyclosporiasis outbreaks, but every day the numbers keep growing. And cyclosporiasis is not the only foodborne illness circulating in the country. The FDA reports 8 ongoing outbreaks. Others are linked to E. coli and salmonella. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, what can we do to avoid contracting foodborne illness and food poisoning generally? With the confusion over expiration dates, how to know what's safe to eat? Plus, we'll get basic food preparation tips, ways to prevent dangerous bacteria from multiplying in your kitchen. What are your questions about keeping your family safe and healthy and free of food poisoning? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The outbreak of the cyclospora parasite has caused alarm across the country. Maine may not be seeing the cases linked to the outbreak that other states are, but there is certainly reason to be cautious. Today, we're going to learn about preventative measures to avoid food poisoning generally and other safe practices. Joining me for the hour, Stephen Combs, who's an epidemiologist with the Maine Centers for Disease Control. He is the foodborne and waterborne disease epidemiologist. And Gulsen Akdemir Evrondilik is associate extension professor and seafood technology and food safety specialist with the UMaine Cooperative Extension. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you avoiding buying bagged lettuce these days? Are you worried often about whether something's safe to throw out? Do you have other questions about food safety? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. And Stephen, I'll start with you. When you look at these maps on the national news and national publication, it looks as though Maine has been spared this most recent scary outbreak. Is that what you're seeing at the CDC? Does it seem as though there are not any cases in Maine? And is there any way to know for sure?
Thanks, Jennifer. Happy to be here. So Maine has been seeing cyclosporiasis this year. We've not had any that have been definitively linked to the multi-state outbreaks that you've heard about on the news. However, we are seeing some sporadic cases that have been acquired through international travel and other means, but we are continuing to investigate cases, and that may change in the near future.
And how do we know, when you say maybe some cases associated with international travel, how do we know that this is what it is when somebody comes down with what most of us call food poisoning?
Yes, great question. So if somebody is sick with an enteric illness or one that affects the intestinal tract, if the symptoms are severe or prolonged enough, we usually recommend that people go see a medical provider and get tested. And one of the things they can test for is cyclosporiasis, in addition to other enteric illnesses, bacteria, viruses, and other parasites.
Okay, all right. So you have seen a few cases, no more or no less than usual years, other years?
Right now we're at 9 confirmed cyclosporiasis cases. Last year we had 4, the previous year 12. So it is something that we see usually every year, at least as of late, but it does seem like we're on track to exceed likely the previous couple of years case counts.
All right, Gulsen, I'll turn to you. Cyclosporiasis is just one of the many foodborne illnesses we can get, right? And it's something that's in this big umbrella that we call food poisoning. I remember when I was a kid, there were big concerns about salmonella outbreaks. So sort of tell us what are the kinds of things we need to be, I don't want to use the word fearful, but cautious of when we're talking about food poisoning. What is food poisoning anyway? What can cause it?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation, and I'm happy to be here. When we are talking food poisoning, we usually mention about like bacteria like Salmonella, E. coli, coliform, Listeria species. And I'm working with the seafood communities here, and Vibrio is one of our biggest concerns. So when we are like talking and like teaching about like food safety, food poisoning, food infection, and intoxication, we are like basically focusing on bacteria. But this incident show us that, you know, like we should be also careful about parasites too. And it has been affecting like 9 states in the United States and like almost like 2,000 cases reported so far. So that means foods, and we should like careful about like we are consuming food because they are like nutritious for us, right? So we are consuming because they are like the good source of protein, like essential amino acids, like the fats and vitamins, and bacteria, microorganisms, parasites, they also like these foods because they also need same sort of like nutrients to grow up and to multiply, to proliferate. So this also like this incident shows us that, you know, like we should be careful about like the to produce safer food, to consume safer food, and food safety and food security is still like number one concern, not only United States, in whole world. So we should like also give importance about like food safety and how we can produce safer for communities.
All right. Isn't that interesting? So the bacteria that we are worried about thrive in the same kind of food that helps us thrive. So the healthier it is for us, that there is some nasty irony there, that the food we're supposed to be eating is the food that's most likely to make us ill sometimes. But Stephen, let me ask you that. It's really easy to get freaked out by some of these news reports, especially when they use expressions like explosive diarrhea. You know, I mean, my goodness, no one wants a parasite that causes that. But really, how rare are cases, serious cases of foodborne illness? Are we talking something that most people will get at some point in their life? 1 in 10, 1 in 100?
Yeah, so I think the statistic is about 1 out of 6 people a year might experience foodborne diseases. And wow. whether you're saying food poisoning or something more specific, we do have a wide variety of foodborne illnesses here in Maine, between Salmonella, Campylobacteriosis. We've got Vibriosis that Golson mentioned. It could be a variety of different organisms that might cause you to become sick.
So 1 in 6 every year, super common. Is the case that most people get something that sort of doesn't, makes them not feel so great for a while, for a day or two, and then they're over it and it's not really something that impedes life? And I'm going to go out on a limb here, if anything makes us stronger and more resilient for next time we encounter that bacteria?
So there are some illnesses that go by really quickly and you're over them within 24 to 48 hours. Some of the ones you've probably heard about, like norovirus with cruise ships, those can be rather intense for those 24 to 48 hours, but usually they're over pretty quickly. Oftentimes people do get over their illnesses pretty quickly, don't go see a doctor, or don't report their illnesses. So it's a level of severity and how long they're affected usually impacts when they decide to go seek medical attention.
Whether talking about a parasite like Cyclospora or if we're talking about a bacteria like E. coli, are these ever or often deadly?
Yes. So there can be ones that that can cause death. Thankfully, in Maine, most of our foodborne illnesses do not result in death. We have had some in the past, and those are always quite severe, and usually a hospitalization occurs. It's always sad. But most of ours don't necessarily require hospitalization, and people recover on their own or with treatment that they get from their doctor.
Gulsen, I want to ask you about a quandary I think many of us have in our own kitchen. I personally hate wasting food. I do not like the idea of throwing out perfectly good food. And I know because I host Maine Calling what a major societal problem food waste is. And so it's not just a personal belief, it's knowing that it's better for all of us to not waste food, given that I don't want to get my family sick. And there's so much confusion about expiration dates and what they mean. Thank goodness for the internet, but it gives confusing information often. So I want you to start by just giving us some basic tips on what you do in your own kitchen and how what you recommend people do. And I'm going to start with leftovers. If you have made chicken and broccoli for dinner, how long can it stay in the fridge before you need to toss it?
Yeah, we thank you. We should be careful about and then like and also like have a knowledge that every food has different properties. And because of that, they have like different shelf life and different, they have to be like kept in differently, even though they are in the refrigerator. For example, if you are having like chicken or meat or poultry and pork, you know, they are very prone to spoilage very quickly. So especially when we are buying these products from market, we should be careful about like how we should keep them in our house. So mostly if we are going to consume like meat and meat products in like the next day, we can keep them in refrigerator. But if we are going to store them more than a day, it is best practice to freeze them and then make sure that they are not thawing and freezing again. Because this, if you thaw it, like say that, okay, so I'm going to plan to have chicken today, so I just, you know, like thaw it in the refrigerator and then decided not to cook it today and then freeze it again. So this is like one of the worst thing can do, can we can do as a practice. So be careful about like thawing and freezing cycle and not to thaw and freeze, especially meat and meat products. So
So
like if
once,
you
if
do.
you buy something frozen, keep it frozen, and once it thaws, do not refreeze it.
Once it thaws, make sure that you cook it thoroughly. And cooking temperature is also important. I know like in United States, most of the time people like rare or like, you know, like the like meat cooked products, especially in restaurants. But at home, especially we should be careful that we are fully cooking the products and then make sure that when we have poultry, the internal temperature reach out at least 165 Fahrenheit. If we are cooking ground meats, the temperature, internal temperature should reach at least 165 Fahrenheit. If you have like whole cuts of beef, pork, or lamb, we should be make sure that the internal temperature at least 145 Fahrenheit, and plus we have like 3 minutes resting. So this is important that we are like we need to make sure that we are fully cook our products. And the other things like storing our products in our household, if we are, we should be like separating the foods. Like for example, like make sure that you are like storing your meat and poultry away from your like the seafoods or like your vegetables and like the dairy foods. So because they may drip, and then you know they may, it's possible that you know you may have like outage, electrical outage, or like you may leave the door open a little bit by accident, and then temperature inside your refrigerator or freezer may increase, and then when this thing happens, there should like contamination from one product to another. So what I
So
do in practice,
use the drawers that your refrigerator comes with. Make sure you use the veggie drawer for veggies only, the meat and cheese drawer for, but
So what I do in first,
I
what I
want
do
to
in
circle back though when you say that you use meat within a day, because if one goes to the grocery store, there will be a date on sometimes for packaged meat, a date that
yeah.
is 5, 6, 7 days past the
Let's
date
see.
you are buying it. I have asked the butcher at the grocery store. He says, yes, that's fine. If you are going straight home and putting it right in your refrigerator, that date 5 days from now is fine. You are disagreeing with that?
I don't disagree. Like when we are like careful about like when we are going to finish the like the consumed products, the expiration date or like the use by date is also depend on like the temperature. You know, like some of the products are frozen when we buy from the grocery stores, and some of them are like refrigerated. So still, you should be careful about like the use by date or like the expiration date. And also, this comes with the two parameters. We should be careful about the date and temperature. Because if it is already in refrigerated temperature, the use like the expiration date or like the use by date should like shorter, because this product has like shorter shelf life. And then if you like you have to after you buy it, you have to make sure that you properly store your product within the 2 hours, because in 2 hours most of the bacteria can grow in your product, especially if you buy like frozen products. And then if you like the rest of this products like left in room temperature more than 2 hours, these products can be tau, and then the bacteria can grow very fast in the frozen products once they are thawed. So make sure that you kept the product, like if it is refrigerated, you should keep it like in refrigerated. If you are not going to use it next day, you have to freeze them. And also the other important issue is like we buy like fruits, vegetables, meat, and like you know like the other sort of products. And we should keep them separately in small portion. For example, if I buy refrigerated meat and it is like big, if it is a big portion, if I'm not gonna cook it like or consume it in the next day, I always divide it into small portion and then keep them in freezer in small portion. Even though you know I need more, that I can bring like the take the like the two of the small portion and then thaw it properly. So like it's a good practice to store the meat products, especially meat products, in small portion in freezer or in refrigerator, depending on when you are going to consume. In terms of fruit and vegetables, I always keep them in the proper shelf. And also for the vegetable, especially for the green vegetables, I always wrap them either like the paper towel or put them in the like the Ziploc bag so that you know they don't contaminate other foods. Regarding with the Cyclospora, because especially the greeny or leafy vegetables, they have like very big surface area. Yeah. And the surface is not smooth. It is kind of like rough surface. So this surface allows bacteria and parasite to attach to the like the attachment surface area. So the surface area is like big, and then we have like enough moisture in the refrigerator and enough moisture in this product itself. This bacteria and parasites or viruses can attach and survive in the product for a long period of time. So this is good practice to sometimes cover up with the paper towel or put in the like the Ziploc bag so that one product cannot contaminate other one, and then we provide cross contamination. So I especially suggest or like urge our listener to be careful about cross contamination, meaning like contaminate one product from other and transfer bacteria from one product to another.
All right, so cross some important takeaways. Be careful about cross-contamination. 2 hours is sort of a time to keep an eye on. Do not let
Yes.
food be out for 2 hours, either between the store and your home or out on your counter. The quicker the better. If you're going to freeze something, do it in small portions and be especially concerned about leafy greens and protect those because of the surface area. They can really grow some bacteria on them. And so all great advice. I'm wondering, Stephen, if at the CDC you have seen one food product that seems to be a particularly, oh, what's the word? Suspicious culprit. Do you see the same thing over and over again, that it is fill in the blank, that is it leafy greens? Is it eggs? Is it pork? What is it that seems to be the thing that brings cases to your attention more often than others, or is there one?
Oh, yeah, there are quite a few ones that are tied to specific diseases and then might be tied to multiple diseases. Obviously, chicken, if you're handling raw chicken, that's something that we note for Salmonella, sometimes Campylobacter as well. And then there are a variety of other ones, even contact with live chickens. We have an outbreak right now. We're part of a multi-state outbreak for backyard poultry, where we have almost 30 cases that's in Maine residents that are involved on that. And that one's inching towards 1,000 cases overall on the national level. So
So we
an,
have 30
that's an
cases.
example.
Tell me more about that. We have 30 cases of a backyard poultry outbreak. Is this you? Is this unusual?
It's unusually high. Every year we are included in this outbreak. It starts when people are ordering the baby chicks, usually around springtime, and they're handling them. And the type of bacteria that is identified when they go to a doctor and get tested has been matched or linked to these other ones across the nation. And so that's how they really tie those in. It's more challenging to do that for cyclospora because cyclospora is a parasite, but for our bacterial and enteric diseases like Salmonella, that's one of the ways that we link to a national outbreak.
In this backyard poultry outbreak, what is the name of the bacteria?
Salmonella.
Oh, it is Salmonella. Okay. And in the cases, the 30 cases, how sick did those people get? Are they all farmers and how sick did they get?
No, they're not all farmers. Some people, this is more of a hobby or something new that they're trying. And yes, we've had people that have been hospitalized for these cases. So we haven't had any deaths, which has been good. But it can definitely put people in the hospital, especially if they're immune compromised. So they have some health conditions that might make it the illness more severe, and for them to be hospitalized for longer. So.
Oh dear. Okay, well, we do need to take a quick break. Our topic today is food safety. What are your questions? Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about food safety. It's in the headlines. What can people do in their daily lives to prevent food poisoning and other ailments? My guest, Stephen Combs with the Maine CDC, Ingulsen Akmedir Avrondelik with the UMaine Cooperative Extension. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Let's see, we will go to Freeport and Tom. Hi, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, I actually have three questions, but one is the source, and has any other source other than the one corporation in Mexico been identified as a source for this latest illness? And I understand there's some political implications there involving their contributions. But the other another question, quick question I have is what you think of the efficacy of third-party inspections. My recollection of that colors that is a peanut butter manufacturer in Pennsylvania who had passed their third-party inspections with excellence after having contaminated a product that infected, I believe it killed five people, and it they just simply falsified the records, the biological records. And how severely do you think the FDA cutbacks from Musk Trump have affected the FDA inspection process? Thank you.
Tom, thanks for calling in, but I'll start, Stephen, with the first one. What do we know about the source of these outbreaks that we're hearing about in the news? Is it still only one potential source and then all the other outbreaks not known?
So lettuce has been identified for that one that you've heard about, we've talked about, but there is strong evidence that there is another food, at least one other food source that is still to be identified that's causing a lot of these illnesses and some of these other outbreaks that you're hearing. I would imagine that with hopefully in the next week or two, if not even sooner, they'll be releasing more information and hopefully some recalls can be put out there.
And is it always so tough to figure it out?
No, this is cyclosporiasis in general is tougher because of the testing is the genetic testing. We don't have a bacterial this isn't a bacteria, so it's not easy to link cases via laboratory testing. So for our other diseases like Salmonella or Shigatoxin producing E. coli, those we're able to link because we have that laboratory evidence that's really strong. So now we're just relying mostly on trace back efforts by regulatory partners, as well as the epidemiology that our epidemiologists collect on the risk factors in the foods consumed.
All right. And Golson, his other question was about third-party inspection and specifically citing a peanut butter outbreak. What could you say to Tom about the efficacy of, was that a third-party inspection? Was that sort of a an outlier, that case?
Every food companies or like the processing facilities should comply with the regulation, whether they are regulated by FDA or USDA. So I'm sure this company also had like this complicated compliance with this regulation. But even though we have like third party inspection or other auditing services, still, you know, like contamination may happen. It's important to identify the source of the contamination and magnitude of the contamination. In this case, I was just reading this outbreak like last week. This is such a coincidence. And then, you know, like they identify what kind of product was associated with this, and then they recall this product. But even though we have like very rigid and very strict food safety programs, like the inspection from Health and Human Resources Department of Agriculture, Department of Marine Resources, still this kind of outbreaks may happen. It's important to identify the source of the outbreak and the magnitude of the outbreak, and then recall the product as soon as possible, and also inform general public about this product. If the product lot or like the specific barcode is identifying, then inform people so that they don't consume this product, and you know like what they can do if they did consume, what kind of symptoms they can expect, and you know like they can talk to their local health and human resource department, and also they can also talk to their physician if they have the symptoms. So even though like to cut it short, even though we have like third party inspection auditing services, still we can have this kind of outbreaks.
We'll go to Carolyn calling from Portland. Hi, Carolyn, go ahead.
I'm going to ask about if you have like a big turkey or cut of meat or a big vat of stew or chili or something, is it better to cool it on the counter for a while or put it in the refrigerator right away? I'm worried about having the temperature of the fridge go up.
Good question. I'll turn it back to you, Golson. Is it a good idea to let things cool on the counter for a little while before putting them in the fridge? Does it depend on what brand of refrigerator you have?
It depends also like what is the season you are having. If you are like having like hot season like August in Maine, the temperature inside your home, inside the count like in the counter would be high also. The best practice is to cool it as soon as possible. If you are like worrying about like the size of the product and then the increase in the temperature inside the refrigerator, if it is possible, I will still suggest to cut it in a small portion. If you don't want to do it, you can put in the cold like ice packs, you know, like you can like cover up with the ice packs or like cover it with the plastic container, put it in the ice bed or like the cold water. It's gonna help you to cool it down like as soon as possible. But when you are doing this, make sure that you are not contaminating your product also. Like for example, if I'm going to use ice pack to cool it down, I want to make sure that I'm covering up like my product so that it's not going to contaminate it from out sources too.
So if you have a big vat of chili, it's maybe better to put it in two or three smaller containers, put those in the fridge, and maybe just put a little icy on top of them, one of those little ice packs on top of them.
So the best practice is like to develop like practices to cool it down as soon as possible.
Okay, well, boy, that's not news I want to hear. It's a lot easier just to put the big pot in the fridge. Colson, Carolyn, thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Maura from Falmouth. Hi, Maura, go ahead.
Hi. So actually, I'm out here in the dog park, but anyway, so I got explosive diarrhea, and it was explosive on July 10th, and I'm still having symptoms now. I went to my doctor's on the 13th, and they prescribed some stool tests, turned some in on the 14th, but they didn't give me the right kit, turned another one in the 15th, still don't have the results. So I went to my doctor last week, and I said, I can't do this anymore. It's been 10, 12 days, and they gave me Bactrim, and I still have some symptoms, but I am getting better. So my question is, why don't we have our testing geared up? My test isn't even done yet, and it was turned in the 15th. The doctor said the labs are backed up, and they're specialized labs. And I understand that CDC, under RFK, cut the surveillance of these foodborne pathogens July 1st, 2025. So what's going on? Why is it so dysfunctional? Thank
Maura,
you.
it sounds horrible. I'm so sorry for what you're going through, but Stephen, she is talking. I mean, we're having this conversation on July 28th. It's been almost 2 weeks since her good lab went in. What's going on?
So yes, some labs that are specialized are the ones that are performing the cyclosporiasis testing, and the I can't comment on them in particular. Our state public health lab does not do the testing, so I'm not as familiar with the turnaround times. But considering there are thousands of cases in some of the U.S. states, particularly Michigan, there might be some delay. And yeah, I'm sorry you're still not feeling well, and hopefully you get those test results back soon.
And what about the second part of Mora's question? Do you feel as though the surveillance of important diseases has been affected in the last couple of years under RFK's leadership at the Department of Health and Human Services? Or are you not able to say that because of your job?
I'd prefer not to say, but I would think the answer is fairly evident.
Okay, Maura, good luck to you. I hope you feel better soon. We're going to go to Heather calling from Phippsburg. Hi, Heather, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about when I hear this information coming out in the news, it tends to make me want to just double down on shopping local farms and farmers markets and organic farm stands. And I'm wondering if there's any information or tracking with any issues with those producers.
Heather, thank you so much for that question. This is a conversation, Stephen, I'm hearing a lot, is that people I know are saying, thank goodness it's farmers market season. Thank goodness I can buy lettuce at the farmers market or grow it in my garden. Are there problems with locally sourced? We're hearing a lot about bagged lettuce. So if you avoid bagged lettuce, are you going to be avoiding these problems or not necessarily?
I would say not necessarily. While you might not get cyclosporiasis, there are plenty of other foodborne diseases. So I would say you still need to wash your produce and take all those prevention measures for any food that you buy, regardless of where you get them.
All right. Well, Heather, thank you for your question. We are going to take another quick break. What is your question for our experts? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Food safety is in the headlines, especially the record number of cases of cyclosporiasis. What can people do in their daily lives to prevent food poisoning and other ailments? My guests are Stephen Combs with the Maine CDC, Ingolson Akhmedayer Avrandilik with the UMaine Cooperative Extension. Share your comments and questions. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. A pretty long email here from Maggie, but the end of it is the question, and that's where I'm going, Golson. She says, other than avoiding fruits and vegetables altogether, does soaking, mind you, not rinsing, in white vinegar help? So right before the break, Stephen said you want to be sure you wash your fruits and vegetables. What do we mean? What is good enough? Is spinning the lettuce in a lettuce spinner underwater good enough? Or do you want to buy one of those products that you spray? Or do you want to use white vinegar? Golson, how do you make sure that you are washing your fruits and vegetables properly?
Thank you. This is a very thoughtful question. And this is like the question that everybody's also like wondering, what is like the best practices? I mean, like vinegar and other kind of like the disinfectants that like readily available in the markets, they are basically like acidic products, which means like, you know, like they can kill the bacteria. But in terms of like the washing with the vinegar or washing with like the, or spraying with the other products, their effectiveness is not really high. So you shouldn't be relying on solely with these products. You know, like I have seen like people are like putting some vinegar or adding some vinegar on their like washing water, or like there are like some other chemicals available in the markets. But my best suggestion is like to wash your like vegetable or fruit or whatever product you are going to have thoroughly with the water, you know, like the rinse with the water and then dry it after that. So like soaking in the water, like living in the water will also help you. And I personally use also like this spinner at home, because like after you wash it, still you can have like still like dirt particulates, like soil particulates, like, you know, and like small insects flying around. So this spinning also help you to remove like the other dirt in case you still have like left in the product itself. I mean, like, I personally don't use, like, vinegar or other chemicals. I just wash thoroughly with, like, the very good quality of water and then spin it and then dry it.
All right. So you just use water. But you say you wash and then you dry it. That's such an interesting thought because, well, right now is Maine wild blueberry season. My husband and I bought a great big 10-pound container of blueberries yesterday. We're thrilled. So if I'm going to have blueberries on my yogurt in the morning, I need to rinse it and then dry them before I put them?
No. I'm sorry. Let me clarify this thing. If you are going to like store it in the refrigerator for a period of time, drying is best practice, because especially for the leafy vegetables, because you know, like they have like very like the big surface area and their moisture content, water content is high. So they're very prone to spoilage in a couple of days. You will see it like when you just leave it in it with the water. So it is a good practice to just like dry it with the towel or like with the cloth, a cotton cloth, so that you know, like you remove like excess water and then they are gonna last longer than they supposed to be. That's like the best practice. If you are gonna use right away, there is no need to dry it.
Okay. And what about just not washing fruits and vegetables until you're going to consume them and then washing them right before consumption?
This is also another practice, but make sure that especially like sometimes I also buy like my vegetables and fruits from farmers market too. Sometimes they can come with the soil and dirt particulates. So if this is the case, you want to remove like the micro particulates or like the dirt before you put them in your refrigerator. If it is already washed, like for example, if I buy like vegetable or fruit from markets, they are already washed. Sometimes they are like double washed. If this is the case, I don't wash them before I use it. So I just put them in the refrigerator with the container and make sure that they are not in contact with the dairy, meat, and other products. And then I just wash them before I use them.
Stephen, Greg on Facebook has a question about sovereign food programs in Maine. And this is an entire movement and we don't have the time to get into it all right now. But the reality is that there is a debate that's going on about whether or not farmers can sell their food direct to their customers on a basis of trust and relationship and sort of circumvent the whole USDA system. This has been happening for years quietly, and now towns have passed food sovereignty laws that enable it more formally. And I'm just wondering, Stephen, what you're seeing at the CDC. Are you seeing more cases of foodborne illness from these purchases that are made outside of the system, or not really?
Good question. We're not really tracking the food that's between in those two categories, and so I can't give you any data on that, unfortunately.
I say, Gulsen, do you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would like to inform our farmers and consumers that University of Maine Cooperative Extension have some programs for the farmers and to produce safer food. So some of them are the Safe Serve, and this is for the restaurant and small scale food producers. And also we have produce safety alliance grower training. So this training is basically for the farmers, so they can learn what practices they can take when they're producing food before selling. And also if they have any question, they can call or send email to Cooperative Extension. And we have so many specialists and educators all over the Maine in different counties, and they will go ahead and help them, and they can also provide some guidelines how they can make their food safer before they serve it to the consumer or before they are selling in the farmer's market.
Stephen, earlier we had the call from the woman in Freeport who just sounds like has had a really rough time with these horrible symptoms. I want to ask you just the broader question of, if you're not feeling well and it's gastrointestinal, how do you know when to go to the doctor or to urgent care and when to, maybe just make sure you're drinking enough fluids and wait?
Yeah, I think this is kind of an individual decision, but some things would elevate that in a normal person. If they start having real severe symptoms, they can't keep food down for a long period of time, or it's just been a very prolonged illness. And I would hope that those people go see a provider so that they can hopefully get treated and get better.
All right. And there are ways to treat these yes. illnesses. You don't have to suffer.
Yes, depending on what they are, if it's norovirus or if it's bacterial or parasitic, there are treatment options, for sure.
And an email here from Nancy. How long is food safe in the refrigerator and freezer during a power outage? I've heard if you don't open the fridge, your food is okay for many hours. How many hours? Same question for freezer. Ooh, Gulsen, I'm going to guess it depends on what kind of freezer and refrigerator you have and how tight they're packed, right?
And also what kind of food you are having inside, right? Usually 2 hours is kind of the safety time. And the best practice is if the food in the freezer, especially meat and meat product, are thawed, they shouldn't be used back.
If they're thawed, you should throw them out.
Yeah. Yeah. In refrigerator, it depends if the refrigeration temperature gets higher for a long time, then you will see that food starting to spoil. So especially if it is meat, dairy, and egg products. So I would suggest them to be careful about it. If the temperature inside temperatures around room temperature, they should definitely, and then if it is more than 2 hours, they should definitely not to consume these products, even though they are in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
So they can check the temperature, what is the temperature in the refrigerator, and then they can go ahead and see how long the power outage was going on. If it is more than 2 hours, that means the temperature is already high in the refrigerator. So, and also they can see some of this off orders starting to establish, but still if it is meat products, dairy products, egg, I should be careful about it and then throw the foods away to make sure.
What does the temperature need to be? I'm thinking about a couple instances when there's been a power outage. We haven't opened the refrigerator. The power's come back on. We open it and everything, I'm going to use the phrase, still feels cool. What is cool enough?
Usually, like the regular refrigeration temperature, you know, like if it is like below 40 degrees C, it's safe, because we in food safety term, we call like the danger zone. The danger zone is like between 40 and 140 Fahrenheit. So if the temperature is, if the your food temperature is like between this range, then you should be careful about it and don't consume this product if it's especially like lasts for 2 hours. Because at that temperature, especially the temperature close to the room temperature, bacteria can grow and then reach out like the enough number that can make people sick. So 2 hours is usually enough at room temperature for a specific bacteria to multiply and proliferate and then spoil the food and then make people sick. So there is a like, I would like to like clarify one thing. If foodborne pathogen grows in the food, they may not spoil the food. So when you smell it, when you see it, like the, if it looks normal, it may look normal to you, but they may grow up inside. So sometimes we go by our senses. Like we can say, okay, this food looks good, you know, like doesn't have like off odor or doesn't have like off smell. But be careful. There could like foodborne pathogen growing inside without having any off odor or off flavor. So best thing is to check the temperature. What is the temperature inside? How long was the power outage? And how full your refrigerator or freezer was? You know, if it is too full, it's possible that temperature increased inside the refrigerator. And if you didn't check the temperature or like open the door right after the power was on, then you may not be able to see what was the temperature and how long it lasts at the higher temperature. So there's a like kind of like the danger in there. So I still want to be suggest people that check how long was the power outage, how was your refrigerator, like was it full, was it like empty, and also like to check the temperature when the power was on, and then if it was like less than 2 hours, if the refrigeration temperature is still like closer to like the refrigeration temperature, like original refrigeration temperature, it is kind of safe to consume the product.
We'll go to George calling from Fairfield. Hi, George, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jennifer. Thanks. Actually, I think you already covered the big part that I was going to say, which is that now it's summertime. This seems to be the common denominator is just the warm temperatures and things that can grow. I'm not sure we need to know the individual minutiae of what can get us sick, but if we just keep things cold. And so, yeah, having a generator and making sure that your generator is actually up and capable to run instead of just in the wintertime, I think is a smart practice. The other thing is like your freezer. I wasn't listening as close, but an efficient running freezer is a freezer that's kept effectively full. And when you keep it, you know, close to full, when you put a new item in there, it freezes much more quickly than just the cold air trying to warm it up.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I've gone out shopping, I can't come right home. When I get home, my meat might be warming up. Instead of, if I'm going to eat it the next day, I might put it in the fridge. But first, I'll stick it in the freezer and I'll set like an egg timer for 5 minutes, and I'll just kind of quick and cold, you know, cool it down a little fast. So yeah, just I think the paying attention to your freezer, you know, cleaning the coils on the refrigerator and whatnot this time of year is prudent. And so that's I just think that thinking about cold temperatures and how to ensure that is the safest bet.
Yeah, think bigger picture and think about your appliances. And I'm wondering too, George, it sounds to me like you think this through. If you're somebody who lives in Maine, like lots of people who live in Maine, and you have a little bit of a drive to and from the grocery store, or maybe even you're going to an island, probably not a bad idea to have a cooler or at least insulated bag and some freezy packs. I see both of our guests nodding right now. I mean, it doesn't hurt. It's not hard. And to pack your cold things together in the bag. I know that sounds simple, and many of you are right now saying, no, duh, I know that. But I tell you, not all baggers do that. And packing your cold food together in the bag is, Gulsen, I see you nodding. That is helpful, right?
Yeah. The key thing is like to maintain the cold storage chain. So like I would like suggest them, especially for the summer times, avoid temperature fluctuations and then keep the products as like the cool as possible throughout like the transportation. As you mentioned, like people are living like some island, like away from the stores, like the, and then the temperature is really high outside. So thinking about if your food is like staying in your trunk for a couple hours, you know, like it will be tall and temperature go high. So the key is like to keep the cold chain as much as possible to make sure that your food is safe.
Good final words. Keep the cold chain as much as possible. Thank you, Gulsen Akhmedir Avrandilik with UMaine, Associate Extension Professor and Seafood Technology and Food Safety Specialist. And Stephen Combs with the Maine CDC. He's an epidemiologist in charge of foodborne and waterborne problems. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy, Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, retirement and how attitudes and approaches are changing. It's part of our series, Life Passages. This is Maine Public Radio.